If you had to guess, and I'm so bad, should put this in the quiz next week. How many board game podcasts do you think there are?
120.
I'm going to go to, I'm laughing at you, and so is the audience. I'm going to go to Board Game Geek and look in the community. They have a page for podcasts, and they list all of the podcasts if you've uploaded it, right? They're not just like searching, but anyone who's like on their own accord said, we're a podcast.
One, two. Oh, I don't like that you're counting by single numbers.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to get a baseline of how big these boxes are, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
There's 50 in a column.
Mm-hmm.
Two columns on a page.
Mm-hmm.
Let's find out how many pages there are.
I feel better about my guess now.
Really? So that is 100 on a page. There's 11 pages.
Oh, I was way under.
It's 1100.
You remember that time when you wanted to be a Storybook Brawl podcast because we could have been the first?
Yeah.
This is definitely not that.
This is definitely, we are not the first board game podcast
by any metric.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we...
we play the mythos phase after each player's turn in Arkham Horror.
My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. And today we are joined by Dylan and Dan from City Square Studios, a New Zealand-based board game designer and publisher. Hello, Dylan and Dan.
Hello, this is Dylan.
Howdy, this is Dan.
Thank you for leading with the Misplay. We appreciate that. Can you explain it? Because I don't know the reference.
Yeah, it's a kind of tough as nails co-op, you know, Arkham... a Lovecraftian style themed game. This was quite early on when I was getting into like core games. My brother had bought it. We had read the rules for the first time and we just started playing it. The mythos phase is like the bad phase where you like spawn all your Eldritch horrors in. There's new portals to the Eldritch realms that open. And generally you're supposed to do this after every player has already acted that round. But we had misread the rules and misplayed, and we were doing it after each player's turn. So three players, it makes it three times harder than it needs to be. And we're like, how can anyone possibly win this game? I mean, we were getting pretty far, but there's just no way this is ever going to work. And it wasn't until a few days later, after my brother had read the rules, did we realize, no, that was supposed to be three times easier than it was. We were just misplaying.
You're just playing on the community mod hard mode?
Yeah, definitely.
Give us your origin story. City Square Studios, how did you and Dan meet? How did you and Dylan meet? And where did City Square Studios come from?
Well, yeah, I can probably try and take that one here. So we originally met yonks ago, back in high school, you know, more than 15 years ago at this point. We've done a lot of stuff together. We've originally, actually one of our first projects was writing an iOS game for the iPhone. I think this was the summer Crossy Road was exploding, so we sort of had a crack at writing our own game of that ilk. Since then, had a little thing called the COVID pandemic happen. Dylan and I used this as an opportunity to sort of reconnect. I had moved away from the city where we'd originally met, and Dice Dungeons was a bit of a chance for us to sort of reconnect this time around with a board game. Fast forward a few years since then, and that's where we are today with City Square Studios publishing original tabletop games every 4 weeks.
It's funny that you mentioned the COVID lockdown closures as kind of a reconnecting point, because my friend Peter, who's working with us on our game, we also had that kind of reconnection in during that same time period for a little bit of a different reason, not directly for game design, but... Jason is my board gaming friend, and Peter is my tabletop role-playing game friend. How often do the two of you get to play board games or tabletop role-playing games together or separately?
We play a lot of our own games to play test them, because we have to do them every 4 weeks, so that requires quite frequent play testing. We do that mainly online through like tabletop sandbox software like Tabletopia or Tabletop Simulator, where we kind of just put in our own, well, we use standard components, so we just import like the default stuff and we've kind of got enough to play. I play a lot in my personal life. I'm definitely more of the TTRPG player between us. So I have, regular TTRPG nights. We're both really into board games, so we have our kind of own groups up here. But we do a lot of kind of markets together, so we'll both travel around to where each other are at for that. So we sometimes use that as an opportunity to play a new game one of us has, or more likely than not, play test one of the games that we've already got.
Tell us a little bit more about what you mean by when you go to markets. Are you going and like showing your games? Are you demoing in shops? Like, what does that piece look like in a day-to-day sense for you?
Yeah, so we go to quite a number of markets in a year. I would say probably more than one every 2 months. I think we're probably 7 or 8. So we produce games every single month, and we produce them in something called a zine, which is kind of like a small A5 rule book. I'm not sure what that is in American paper measurements. So we go to a lot of zine festivals where all of those things are sold, but we also go to our local games fairs. We go to role-playing game conventions that are local, and we table at these events selling these zines to people. And it's also a great way to like connect with other creators, find other artists, and if there is time, we love to demo them, but there usually isn't. But yeah.
Great answer.
I think like us, this is not your full-time job. You both have other jobs. Do you see it as something that you would like to be full-time, or is this is a part-time thing and I really enjoy this as a part-time thing?
Yeah, we definitely do. I mean, anybody involved in a creative pursuit would love the creative pursuit to, you know, become, you know, a larger and larger slice of the pie in terms of what they do day to day, right? A really early motivation for Dylan and I, we both work in tech. So we're quite motivated to, you know, have a bit of a creative sort of outlet. So sort of that half of our brain gets exercised, which can be really tricky to, you know, exercise that creative outlet during the old sort of 9-to-5 day job. So that's first and foremost, it's a good chance just to, you know, do things that you don't normally get to do during the day job and try things that are new, try things that are sort of outside of sort of your prescribed expertise and sort of experiment. Which is a little bit hard to get away with on the day job where, you know, you got to get everything right and you got to sort of stick more to your lane.
I kind of never really sort of considered, I don't know what doing game design 40 hours a week as a 9-to-5 would look like. And I actually wonder, because I feel like we're pretty productive putting out a game a month and having to do all the social media and stuff. So I wonder actually how much we could produce if we were given 40 hours a week locked down to do it during the day. I think that's a really interesting thought. People also warn about making your passions your jobs and like turning what you love doing into what you're working. I have that in the back of my mind, and like the whole saying work to live or live to work. I'm definitely in that kind of work to live kind of camp where I have a day job that provides enough resource for me to pursue other things that I'm really passionate about. So like board games is one of them. I also do music. We might get to it later, but I'm also a big cocktail fan. So I do a lot of original cocktails. So that's all made possible because I have this job and I'm not burnt out on any of those things because I can engage with them in that kind of still fun space without being driven by a money motive.
Well, we are going to get to some of those things. But before we do, today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. We're going to be talking a little bit about community later on in the show, so I want to congratulate Board Game Casual on being recognized on the Board Game Geek website in their community spotlight, and for good reason. Board Game Casual's videos are fun, informative, and same as we try to live up to as well. All killer, no filler. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual channel. One of the things that I wanted to say was how drawn to your story we were once we found out you existed, because we had posted on Blue Sky and we were reaching out to people and asking, hey, are there other people that are designing together? Are there other groups of people who are designing games? And you had liked the post. And from there, I just started looking into City Square Studios. And I know it seems like not a big deal, but right down to the hello@email address, I felt like there were a lot of similarities with what you're doing, with what we're trying to do. But also, you've been successful. You've done what we're trying to do, starting with successfully crowdfunding a game. You've actually, this is your third Kickstarter. You have a current one going right now, 52 Pickup, 6 original and unique TTRPGs. It's the second collection. Your first, was it your first one? Dice Dodgems, that was about 4 years ago. Or was there a project that preceded Dice Dodgems?
Yeah, that was, like I said, sort of earlier, Dice Dodgems was a bit of a lockdown project for the two of us. Really, the idea came from Dylan and I over probably a FaceTime call, coming up with ways that we could combine different elements with a standard traditional chessboard in particular, considered a lot of different mechanisms. And we ultimately ended up, I don't know if you're familiar with Matchbox cars, but how could we mix sort of these weird little miniature cars in a sort of strategic grid movement type space? We ran that through a few ideas as to different themes we could apply to that. And we ultimately ended up on Dodgems or bumper cars, as they're actually better known here in New Zealand, funnily enough, where Dodgems, you know, you're within a constrained sort of space. And the idea is to use your pieces to sort of bash the heck out of each other. And ultimately, it's the last player standing who ultimately prevails. So that was our very first Kickstarter, as you say, about 4 or 5 years back. As our first sort of traditional boxed game, though it also came with a digital tier, which we had added quite late in the process. We'd kind of just assumed, you know, the game would have to come in a box and have sort of custom components. But it dawned on us pretty quickly that, well, actually, you know, any sort of regular chessboard, you know, if you constrain the size of the chessboard, actually works just as well. And there is, of course, the print and play movement where it's, it was new to me at the time, but the idea of actually selling PDFs that people print out and play the games on sort of regular pen and paper with downloadable components was something that worked really well with Dice Dodgems. You, of course, don't necessarily need a little bumper car shaped miniature. You could sort of bring your own miniatures that you already have.
So you mentioned in your description of the development and design of Dice Dodgems being rooted in a chessboard and Matchbox cars that you had at home. We know from talking to you and following your website and the way that you publish things, there's this environmental awareness and an eye towards sustainability, and I would call it like access also. Where does that value, where does that interest come from for you? And how do you think it affects the way you think about designing games like Dice Dodgems forward?
So one of the many different reasons we've ended up sort of thinking about component reuse and sort of standard game components is actually quite a practical consideration, you know, when it comes to actually producing a game, getting it into a box, getting that box, you know, labeled and packaged up and ready to be shipped, taken across an ocean and, you know, to get to your end customer. That's pretty tricky, especially when you're based down at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, which last time I pulled that up on Google Maps, pretty big expanse. It's quite tricky and very expensive to actually ship your games, you know, the people who actually want to play them, because there aren't that many people down here in New Zealand. So when we talk about the ability to publish games that people don't necessarily expect you to ship custom componentry with every single game. Instead, they can reuse, you know, one of the 3 million green cubes they probably already have in their possession somewhere in their house. It's actually quite a practical consideration for us, a bit of a practical win for us in that, well, we no longer need to worry about that physical distribution element. We're really just focusing on designing the game mechanics, the experience of playing the game. We're able to then ship those rules sort of digitally to get them to our customers who can ultimately still play the game and experience it just almost just as well as if you were shipping bespoke components with every title.
Yeah, I remember I have quite a big boxed game collection at home on two big shelves that kind of tower over me. And I remember kind of standing in front of these two shelves and thinking, how many times have I bought the same D6? How many times have I bought the same cubes in this Euro game? How many times have I got these kind of $1, one gold coin chits? I was just like, what a waste. It kind of dawned on me how much I've just kind of like overconsumed and reconsumed maybe the same thing over and over again. And I'm like, there's kind of got to be a better way at the end of the day. There's got to be a way that's kind of a bit different, but like it's still coming back to the tradition around like playing cards and chess sets that have been around with like human beings thousands of years. I think like dice are older than written language, so it's like so ingrained in us to play, but it's not so ingrained in us to buy and consume different new things all the time.
So from Dice Dodgems, you moved to the zines, or were you already creating zines and publishing them? What came first there, Dice Dodgems or the zines?
Yeah, so Dice Dodgems came first, and we did the Kickstarter. It was successfully funded, and we over-ordered, so we got more copies than we sold for the Kickstarter with the intent of bringing them to markets. And we're going to go to this market, which is the Cancer Society Games Fair in Auckland, the capital. And we're like, well, I thought there's only one thing that we're bringing. Our table's going to be really bare. Maybe I'll, dust off the old zine making gear and make a little card game tabletop zine. And Daniel was visiting at the time. I'm like, hey, I just made this kind of throwaway thing. Do you want to go try it out? So we walked to a local cafe. We put it out on the table. It was a two-player co-op game. We played, and Daniel's like, yeah, this really has legs. I think we can go quite far with this. And we're like, okay, we'll do this as a proof of concept. We only had a few weeks before the market, so we kind of rushed it together. We got some art done from it, hurriedly put together the zine, hand-folded it all the night before, up till like 2 a.m. or something, folding zines, brought it to this market. And, it actually did quite well. The reception was quite positive. And we're like, okay, this is really cool. And I think what it allowed us to do was do what we wanted all along, which was just making games that kind of came to our values and didn't mean we had to do all the stuff like logistics and shipping and all the stuff that brought us away from what we were actually here to do, which was just make games.
And I can tell you, this is the part of the story where I got really excited looking at the zines. Now, keep in mind, I'm somebody who had never, I've never played one, but as an educator, I have built a tabletop role-playing game that I use for math education. So it's a way to teach kids how to learn multiplication and division. And we play it through a role-playing game, similar to like World of Warcraft, where you're leveling up a character and you're getting stronger and you're getting equipment. And then I wrote a book with my fifth grade students about a tabletop role-playing game, kind of like Jumanji. They get sucked into a tabletop role-playing game and they have to figure out how to get out. That was my experience with them. And then when I started looking at what you guys were doing on your Patreon, that kind of, this is the 52 pickup. And I looked at that and I said, man, that is a really good model. That is really interesting that on your Patreon, you are offering a zine a month and they're all different. And as I think Mark has said to me many times already, every one of them is like, so interesting. Like, they've done something with the writing to really call it out to you. Tell us where 52 Pickup gets its name and kind of how it fits in the City Square Studios and your use of Patreon.
I take no credit in the name 52 Pickup. Dylan and I are, I probably don't have to tell you guys, but naming things is really, really hard. Like, incredibly difficult. I actually think back to Dice Dodgems in particular. That took us a solid 6 months to actually land just on the name. let alone everything else in the project, right? And we've embarked on a few other potential products that, or projects that have yet to actually come off the shelf and see the light of day, but we have spent many months trying to come up with a name. And 52 Pickup, I actually think it was an idea of Dylan's, to be honest. I personally think it's a pretty cool name for a few reasons. For one, it sort of gets at the heart of sort of what we do, which is we design games that many of which can be played with a standard deck of playing cards. So that completely, that old dusty deck you've got on the shelf that you haven't actually played in ages, you can bust that out. And I think you can play 12 of our titles incorporate cards in some form or another, which I think just shows the versatility of a standard traditional deck of cards. I think it's practically infinite at this point.
Where does writing factor in? Because Jason stole the words out of my mouth, but every title of your games on some level like screams writing to me. There's a very engaging quality to the word choice that you use in a lot of your designs and Patreon posts and everything that I've read on the website. How much of your game design process is the like creative writing in lieu as like partnered with game design and making mechanics and playtesting?
Yeah, I think there is kind of a lot of that. I think to start with, I've been like designing games since I've been like 5 years old, you know, writing my own Monopoly versions. I grew up playing, you know, original D&D and Paranoia and all the old board games. So I've always been writing games forever. And I have, like most game designers, a notebook full of all these concepts. And these concepts are like, you know, they're never going to see the light of day. But I really wanted them to, and that was, I guess, another inspiration of 52 Pickup is it's a form that allows you to bring those things to life. So I've got decades of all these ideas that I now get to bring up in a way that people can actually play and it's accessible to play. So it's both pro designer and pro consumer in that way. But yeah, as you're saying, I feel like, I think there was a famous quote about, I think it was about fashion, where it's like, if you want to learn fashion, you need to learn everything but fashion. I think it's the same thing with almost game design and coming up with that. You need to have wide-ranging interests outside of the thing that you're doing. So like, you know, I'm passionate, as you're saying, music and cocktails. I love, you know, all kinds of media. I like philosophy. I did some creative writing and poetry. So it's like, yeah, all combined there. But it's also like, you know, I have things to say about things. I have opinions. And like those also go into my board games successfully or unsuccessfully. I think I'm trying to say something with each piece, as well as design a good game.
Like Dylan was saying before, if you want to get good at fashion, you got to learn everything but fashion. It really appeals to me when I think of sort of Dylan and I as a creative duo, where we kind of get to stick to our strengths, and then we can sort of outsource everything that we don't really know about to one another, essentially sort of cover one another's weaknesses. The creative writing aspect you've spoken about is 100% entirely, and I can't stress that enough, a gift Dylan has, and of which I do not possess in any way, shape, or form. I can't even begin to understand where it comes from. I think you're just sort of born with it sort of innately. And the creative writing aspect, to me, is really what gives sort of the games that soul, that sort of sense and feel of personality. That's that soul and personality shining through from Dylan, I think, at the end of the day. So I think the creative writing aspect is at least 50% of, you know, everything that is 52 Pickup. And then that other 50% is basically everything else. So there's preparing Photoshop files so that you've got a layout that's printable, and there's assembling sort of the zines themselves practically so they can actually, you know, you've got something to put on the table. There's setting up your various online storefronts and thinking about social media and planning out your content calendar, and I could go on.
I think you can absolutely learn creative writing, and I think Daniel's gift is, you know, I might have 17 ideas, but maybe only one of them is any good. And Daniel is very good at curating those ideas and making sure what I actually put on, what I actually leave in and not on the cutting room floor is the best one. I think that's also a really big power. And like, you know, all the playtesting feedback, there's kind of an in-joke between us that I can make something a Dylan game, in which case it means you've got to think 17 moves ahead, and it actually gets way too strategic for what it is. So Daniel's very good at pulling me back from that kind of game designer's abyss and actually making something that most people can play and not just people who like Twilight Imperium.
I think we've joked on the show that Twilight Imperium is not a game that's going to make it into our board game night rotation.
No.
That's it's a whole day excursion.
We've talked Dice Dodgems, which is kind of conventional board game. We've talked about the zines and the move to some of these like tabletop role-playing games. I don't think we've named any of them on the show yet, but I'm going to say I really want to play The Merger. Jason and I were hoping to play a few more of the games. We only got to play Dice Dodgems, but I would really enjoy playing The Merger with Jason. Tell us a little bit about how it's different designing board game versus tabletop role-playing game for you.
So I can compare a project like Dice Dodgems to, you know, any one of our sort of monthly 52 pickup games. And the real difference is, and this is quite relevant for game design and it is all other aspects of the project, but you're going to be really confident in the ideas that you actually settle on when you're committing to a project like Dice Dodgems, because that commitment, you'll be working on that game for, I think we worked on Dice Dodgems for at least a solid couple of years, at least 2 years start to finish. And you don't get to change your mind 1.5 years into the project, right? Once you've chosen some of those sort of critical, those foundational game mechanics, it's really, really tricky to change your mind or come up with new ideas and say, oh, never mind, we'll actually just completely redo that and we'll pick new mechanics or we'll do this completely differently. You're kind of committed, you know, at a certain point. I mean, you're printing games and you're shipping them. So if you change your mind, you can't exactly take those back. So from a game design and also a very practical sort of a production perspective, the commitment and sort of the lead times on a traditional board game are just phenomenally long. You know, they're easily within the months or years. Compared to sort of our print and plays, our standard component games like 52 Pickup, well, given that we're doing one every month, it kind of just shows you that the creative turnaround time necessarily has to be a lot lower, has to be a lot quicker with a much faster turnaround. But that has the benefit of, you do get to think a lot quicker on your feet. You get to change your mind and come up with new ideas a lot quicker because the consequences of changing your mind aren't as dire compared to a project like Dice Dodgems, where you've got to make a decision because you're going to print rule books and put them in boxes at a factory and ship them to customers. And you've got to lock that all in, you know, 6 months ahead of time or whatever. Whereas it comes to the zine games, we kind of own the whole process. Meaning, at the end of the day, it's us writing the blog posts with the rules and publishing them on the night they go up. So that in one sense, we can be a lot more flexible. We could change our mind a lot more right up against that published date.
Tabletop role-playing games are more of that collaborative role-play, collaborative narrative experience. So you need to be able to build in tools that don't box in, they kind of spread out, but still drive the kind of feeling and vibe of the game to the place that you want. You mentioned Merger before. Merger is a game where the players are actually working against each other, but we don't want to do the classic kind of split the party, everyone's shouting out the gate. So we have mechanics or mechanisms that are like, okay, you've got to work together for the shared goal, because if you fail the shared goal, you all lose. But we have a mechanism for hidden goals that if you want to achieve this goal, so you win specifically. So it creates that kind of narrative tension inbuilt in the system itself, while still leaving everything kind of open. While if I was to design that game in such like a kind of a social deduction kind of way, you're going to end up with more like Coup or One Night Ultimate Werewolf, where the mechanisms are kind of like you know, you do this on your turn, you have option A, option B, that's it kind of thing. While that kind of tabletop game opens the narrative out more.
Before we move into our conversation around community, how can people outside of New Zealand access your zines? What's the way to play Merger?
So the place we spend most of our time and effort and energy is our Patreon. It's completely free to join. So we've got that free tier. And what Patreon is for us is it's a space that we own, we control, and it's primarily where we publish, you know, every single one of our games. And so we follow sort of, you know, the model of a magazine where every month we put out a new sort of numbered issue. This month we are working on issue 23, so coming up on 2 years of monthly production. And on that Patreon, you'll get an email in your inbox every month when we publish a new issue. We tend to make the base game free, just completely free to download and view from the Patreon page each month. They'll remain free for that month, and then we'll put them sort of into the back catalog, which is a little bit more exclusive after that first month. And with each game, you can bring up the rules sort of on your phone, on the web, sort of read them through. You can also download our zine templates, which are basically PDFs that you can print out. And we've got a tutorial attached where you make sort of cuts in certain places and folds, and it sort of magically, all of a sudden, before you know it, you've got a little book in your hands.
Yeah, and we're also on the kind of social medias. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We just kicked off on Blue Sky, so that's where you guys found us. So I'm having fun trying that out. I think I've just been on there, I think, just over a week now. So still in that kind of honeymoon experimental phase.
And I should add that your Patreon is Patreon/CitySquareStudios.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, so I think Blue Sky is the segue for us to talk about community, given that's where we connected. And for me, on social media right now, and I should give a little backstory first. We're in year two of our podcast. The whole first year was us coming up with the game that we're going to build. So in perspective, that would be the two of you spending a year saying, I don't know what I want to build. And then you come up with Dice Dodgems at the very end of that. That's what we just spent a year doing, Mark and I, this exercise of game design, designing games, talking about games, introducing them to other people. But we're also a podcast. And one of the ideas behind the show was that we want to take a game and put it to crowdfunding. Well, if we can bring people along for the story, right, we've kind of established, we have this group of people who have already bought into what we're doing, and that they're probably more likely to, you know, kickstart our game. And I, you know, one of my tasks, one of my role on the team is I'm responsible for creating that kind of that social media strategy. And I'm trying to find this balance between being genuine in who I am and who we are. And sometimes it's just this straight up marketing. And I'm trying to keep that needle as close as I can to being genuine. So my first question to you guys is, I don't know, you've done, we have this, I should let the audience know, in front of us, we have this document that lists all our different socials and our follower counts, or, you know, our web traffic views, just to get an idea of where each of us is at. Let me ask you, how do you guys feel about building community, and where do you want to grow? I know you talked about, you know, the physical markets that you go to in New Zealand. Where else do you see yourself growing with your community?
So one of the things you mentioned, being the motivators behind the podcast, is building that following to take with you sort of along the journey. And then ultimately, possibly at the end of the day, you've got that built-in audience to tap into. You know, when you've got your Kickstarter, you've got a collection of people who are plugged in, ready to go, and may support you. That is really smart thinking, and I wish we had thought and considered that before Dice Dodgems. Definitely one of our earliest mistakes was, you know, spending all of our time sort of tucked away in the development process, you know, toiling away, designing a game, figuring out how to get it manufactured and shipped and whatnot, but with absolutely no consideration for the fact that A, nobody knows you exist at the moment because you're toiling away and in silence, essentially, sort of in private. And B, you know, how are we going to move the needle on that once we do hit the go button on the Kickstarter? How do we get the word out? How do we sort of get a little bit of attention? Because nobody can support your product if they don't know you exist, which sounds really obvious in retrospect, but was something we hadn't quite considered. So when we first launched that original Kickstarter, we had spent no time at all. For example, we had never actually launched a pre-launch campaign for Dice Dodgems. We had just shipped the thing and hit the button and away we go. So it was really tricky to get things up and moving. So that was a really, really pretty hectic month. We did eventually get there, of course. But that was a lot of flailing, essentially, and running across to different social media and building up that awareness throughout the month while the campaign was running, instead of doing it ahead of time, which would have been smart. And it's definitely something that we think a lot more these days. Like the podcast, we see 52 Pickup in our Patreon as being that base that we come back to, you know, every single month. We're always sort of checking in with our audience and publishing new stuff, slowly growing sort of that community there, A, so that we've got a tapped in sort of audience of people here who can sort of feedback on the games and, you know, help us make the product better and better. But B, we've got, again, that sort of a engaged audience who, when we do go to launch a new, you know, some sort of new Kickstarter, we've got a built-in audience who are ready to go that we can immediately talk to, who already know we exist and we don't need to sort of reintroduce ourselves.
I think a big part of it comes down to trust and that kind of genuineness that you were talking about before. Like, we're building this audience and we're putting out what we think are like quality games, and we're passionate about what we're putting out and what we're seeing. And we're hoping that builds up trust in the community that what we're going to do next is going to be good because they've seen us do this before and we're passionate about what we're doing and what we're making. That Dice Dodgems Kickstarter was a real eye-opener. We were doing meetings every single evening. How can we get this word out? How can we prove this product? We were going to every game store and game cafe in the area and saying, can we demo this here? Let's get some flyers. Let's give them out. Let's go call on every favor that we can. Let's put this up on Tabletopia. Let's try to get people just playing it. That's where we really got engaged with, like, the print and play community. We're like, how can we make this work for you guys? You tell us what you want out of this and we'll make sure that this actually matches what you're doing. It's kind of like building the airplane while you're flying it. So we sort of like doing it that way. I think there's no better way to learn than, like, you know, contact with the thing that you're trying to do. You just got to get out there and do things and put things in front of people, and then it kind of all clicks into place. I feel like I fall into this trap. You get into kind of like ivory tower thinking. You're just like theory crafting this game in a white room or exactly what you're going to do. But, you know, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face. I think that's what the Dice Dodgems Kickstarter did. And I think we're much better for it. I think 52 Pickup is the understanding that we gained there about what we actually value, what we actually love doing. I think it comes back to that trust and genuineness that you can do by being more open with your audience and, yeah, proving yourself time and time again to them.
There's a lot of talk behind the scenes at the Misplay right now about emails. When we originally launched the website, part of the advice that we had gotten when we started was you need an email list of, you know, 1,000 people before you launch a Kickstarter so that you can email them. And we had created our newsletter. So we have the Misplay newsletter that goes out once a month to people who have subscribed to that newsletter. And, you know, being small like we are, you know, we don't have 1,000 people signing up for our newsletter every month. There's a couple of handfuls of people that have done that, and we appreciate that. But we're also worried that we're gatekeeping some of that stuff. And, you know, behind the scenes, somebody has said, you know, why don't we put that on the website and put that out there? Mark and I, we've done, you know, they said some quality writing over the last year. but we have that partition from people. We have that hidden. And so we are really trying to figure out how to build engagement. One of the barriers, I think, is us. You know, we're creating that wall that blocks people from, you know, engaging with us or reading our content. Is that something, so with Patreon, how do you manage that with your Patreon so that it doesn't feel like gatekeeping? It sounded like you said some of your zines are free, so they just click join even as a free member and they have access to some of them. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we put our most recent issue up free for a whole month, and then we have 4 of our back issues free for all time. So you can just kind of get what we're about, make sure that you actually like what we do before you think about spending the $5 to get access to all 20 plus other, or 15 plus other of our games, which is, you know, sounds like a good deal now that I say it out loud. But we'll probably, yeah, keep it that way. Yeah, at the end of the day, I think it comes back to like the values that we were talking about, where it's like we just like making games and putting stuff out there and having people play it. The kind of money is secondary. That gives us the resource we need to build better products and buy the software we need to make things quicker and spend more time doing the things that make the game there. But yeah, it's not the main drive, at least for me going forward. So yeah, I like to get as much of my stuff in front of people as I can. I was really inspired by how Grant Howitt does it. He's kind of very famous for Honey Heist, which is like a really good one-page TTRPG. He has a Patreon. He makes a decent amount per release. He gets paid per release from his patrons, but then they only get access to that game for like 2 weeks before he makes it public for everyone. And I'm like, well, if it works for him, why can't it work in a similar way for us? Yeah, I think that kind of really proved the model. The other people I was inspired by in the space were Badgers from Mars with their Regicide game, another standard playing card game. The rules are for free. There are other great New Zealand makers, a little bit of nationalism there. And they managed to do a really amazing Kickstarter where they were just selling a deck of cards that was customized to their game with the rules. I know I have 3 of them in my house, and that was kind of the other same model. Well, the games are just out there, but people are still willing to support content that they really love and follow along with those people. So it was a bit freeing. I didn't have to gatekeep. Like, there are people who are completely open and still completely successful. It kind of gave me that assurity around it. And then just, yeah, go back to that core value of I just want to make games and I know this can work.
I really respect your thought about access to the content that you're creating. I think it's easy for us to get bogged down. I think this happens to us, is that we get bogged down with logistics and costs and some of those other elements. And so I really do respect the way you have your content fully public and then let people buy into like the back catalog. I think that's a really clever way to do it, because it rewards people for being continuously engaged in your most current content, which is kind of what we're aiming for, right? We want people engaging. So the question then is, you have this release schedule of your monthly releases of 52 Pickup. I'm only a preliminary member of your Patreon right now, and I know there are other features, like there's a chat section and there's posts and there's other ways for your audience to engage with you. How much interface, like direct interface, do you want with your Patreon audience? Like, do you post regularly in forums? Do you have kind of the message board and chatting back and forth with people who are subscribed? How much of that do you want, and how much of that do you get to do with the audience that you have right now?
It's definitely something we're focusing more on. We've had some pretty kind of heartwarming messages from people direct on Patreon. I feel like I need to... Do you know in Simpsons when Homer is like stuck at the power plant and he has all those pictures of Maggie up over the sign where it, the sign originally says you're here forever, and then it becomes do it for her. I need to do that with all these like positive comments we've been getting recently, print them all out, put them on my wall, so when I feel like demotivated, I can go put them on there and remember why I'm doing that, so like not every one piece of criticism feels like a massive thing. There's actually far more positive things on there, and it's really interesting, like reaching out, like we find Kiwis quite a lot, other New Zealanders, they're like, oh, we thought you were from here, we thought you were just doing this, but no, you're like, you know, an hour out from me, you're like in the same town. And it's also been like really cool, and being able to like meet up with those people and inspire them to kind of put out their own stuff, because we just want more of it around and not just us doing it. Blue Sky has been quite new for us. We saw you guys there, and we've been direct messaging on that and setting this kind of podcast up, but there's been quite a few other people that have seen our stuff and we've been chatting to as well. And I really like that. I don't really use a lot of social media in my personal life, so this has been quite new to me, a new experience, just having, you know, people I don't know message me out of the blue, saying really nice things, and then actually having really thoughtful, engaging discussions like the one we're having today is like, I think it's pretty special, and it kind of shows how great the tabletop community is, both in the TTRPG and board game spaces.
So fun fact, Mark, I created the show document and I had put these columns and rows in for our social media, and I had recorded both of our Blue Sky Fowlers, and my number was, it was like 31. And they had 28. It was about the same. And then I was watching the show doc and they came back in and they edited it and added a few, and then they added a few more. Now they've doubled. And so my question is, what are you doing? I haven't doubled in that time. What are you doing on Blue Sky?
I feel like I have engaged with each of those people that have followed us directly in some way. I feel like I could probably, name them all the interaction, and then they followed us that followed that interaction. I think the way that I do things as well is, again, Blue Sky is completely new to me. I'm not really a social media person, so I'm just trying to figure all this stuff out. The first thing I do is, when I'm looking at Blue Sky, I make sure I engage with all the people that we're like mutuals with already. Like, I make sure that I'm keeping up with everyone else's content and people I follow, and making sure I engage them before I move on to like engaging with new people. And I think I just try to be genuine and add value to the conversations where I can, and recommend stuff, and not be afraid to just not push myself. Like, I genuinely think this is the best thing for you. It's not us. I just want to lift this community up, because like, the more people that enjoy tabletop, the more people that enjoy being part of the community, the better it is for everyone, not just us. And I'm hoping that's why we're getting followers, and it's kind of shining through a bit. But yeah, it's a completely new ball game to me, so I'm just experimenting with what does well while still being like genuine, coming back to my core values, and making sure I can spend most of the time doing what I want, which is making games. And Blue Sky seems to be the format that seems to be working the best for that, with the least kind of barriers to me.
It's funny that you mention showing up in a digital way, because our dance fighting group is also trying to grow our group, because we're pretty small right now. And we've observed the people that we show up for are the people that show up for us. And so I think it's more complicated to do it digitally. And it sounds like you have a pretty good process happening. Dare I say a system, Jason?
Systems. Business.
but like the events and the people that I've gone to are the people who have come to our group for our events.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back to the same thing about just building trust again. Like, I'm there to help. I'm there to add value where I can. I'm there to be genuine. And like you're saying, like, I'm showing up for these people. It builds that kind of mutual understanding and respect for what we do. So it feels like less of a weird place to try and like go, oh, by the way, you should check out my product that I'm really passionate about, but it's a product, so that kind of feels weird for me, like, to say in a normal conversation between like friends kind of thing. So I definitely, and you know, I'm more than the product. Dan's more than the product. City Square is more than the product. So it's not us to not do that, to not just say the product all the time. We're passionate about a lot of other things. And I think that's kind of going back to what you're saying about your club. Yeah. Showing up for the people that show up for you and building that kind of almost like that actual community, and not what like some influencers say a community is, people that are actually genuinely building each other up and are really engaged in not only themselves but each other.
We just want to play and make friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, it's your dance fighting.
It is the literal thing that I say to people when I go visit events. I say I'm just here to play and make friends.
I forgot you play in dance fighting. Yeah.
It's an amazing slogan.
See?
You have mentioned that Patreon is your hub. Our hub is Discord. I think that is where we have spent the most time building community. And we're also in this weird spot where when we built our Discord, it was for a previous project. It was a podcast, but it wasn't about board gaming. And so we kind of rebranded and relaunched. And a lot of the people that are in our Discord came to us for a different reason. They didn't come here to talk about board games. So we're trying to kind of reinvent the way we interact with people in Discord as well.
I think in the continuation of the analogy, I would want to dig in more to when Jason talks about the old podcast, we had like kind of set pieces or set channels or set kinds of things that we would post that would drive the engagement in the Discord. What are some of the regular, like non-product based types of things that you all would post in your Patreon chats, if that's a feature that you use?
So we also have a rather small Discord associated with the Patreon. The way it works is Patreon for certain tiers lets you link up members directly to your Discord so they can sort of automatically be added to the Discord. I think it's fair to say we could probably spend more time and energy on the Discord side directly. I think in particular, posting what I'm traditionally quite nervous to post, but stuff that's in progress and really raw stuff, just getting that into the Discord, getting even earlier feedback than we sort of otherwise already do, is something that we're looking at. When you compare that to the Patreon page, of course, we try to keep, you know, only relatively polished things actually ultimately making it to the Patreon page. Whereas, you know, forums and instant messenger chats like Discord, probably a lot more sort of acceptable of, you know, here's a couple of work in progresses. What do you think? Should I do A or B for this cover art? Get that sort of real-time feedback in Discord. I think it could work really well.
Yeah, the Patreon, I think, are more like regular posts are every game that we release comes with a designer notes post. And that's like free for everyone to read. And that's just like what I was thinking about while making that particular game, or if I've came up with some kind of obstacle or something that we overcome, just something interesting that's linked to that. We also do what we call like a town hall, which is just like a monthly update of what we're doing, what markets we're attending, where can you find us, what are we doing. This I'm sure this podcast will be in that town hall coming up soon. And then just like kind of new things we might be doing, like we've started introducing like wax sealing the envelopes that we mail out our zines for. Just like, yeah, kinds of things we just find fun and interesting and we're putting out there. I think on the Patreon, what I want to do more of is polls, like getting actual user, like community feedback on stuff. Like, do you actually like the way this is going? What kind of games do you want to see more on? I think seeing other creators, I think particularly I've been chatting to Beth and Angel Make Games. There's another fellow monthly zine kind of creator in this space. And they do a lot more polling than us. And I think that's really cool. And really, I guess it makes it more about the community and less about what we think the community wants. But at the end of the day, you know, still just want to make games. So
Dan Dillon, we want to thank you very much for coming on the podcast and telling us your story and talking about community. Tell us one more time where people can find you.
Yeah, so we're on Patreon, City Square Studios with an S. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky, but the best place to follow us is on that Patreon, completely free to join. Get a bunch of games for free and a new free game every month. And you can join for, you know, $5 a month and get access to the entire back catalog, which is over 20 games and growing. I also just want to say thank you to our gracious hosts. It's been a really good first podcast experience. And if you, I give permission to everyone to make as many standard games as they want. I'm not going to gatekeep this. Please send us the games you make using this model. We'd love to play them too.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian Binns, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord.
Tell us one more time where people can find you.
Yeah, so we're on...
Oh, no, Dillon did it away.
We're so in sync.